انت عامل ايه؟
Morning, everyone.
Morning, how you doing? You okay?
Yeah, good, good. You?
Yeah, we're good. Okay. Morning.
Good morning.
Morning, you all right?
Yeah, you?
Yeah, all good. Sun is shining, so all good.
Exactly. Might as well make the most of it. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Namaste, good morning. Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, let's start. Can everyone hear me okay? Om Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai. Tejasvinavatitamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Welcome everyone to today's class. Any questions before we begin? Okay. So we're on chapter 7. Yoga of Knowledge and Wisdom, topic 4, verse 16 to 19, we're going to cover. That ends this topic. The four virtuous types who worship God. Very interesting, this verses explains about worship, what real worship is. And we can learn a lot from it. We all pray to God, we all worship God, but we all do it in our own ways without knowing and understanding what we are doing, why we're doing, is it right or wrong? I mean, any worship to God is right, but then the effort and time you spend, it'd be good to know to perfect it. So this topic explains that. The purpose of worship. And we began this topic last week. We took up verse 16. And verse 16 said, Krishna explains to Arjuna that there are two sets of people, one that worships God and one that doesn't. Of the ones that worships God, there are four categories. The first three categories worship merely for their own selfish reasons, mundane worldly desires, to fulfill their physical, mental, and intellectual desires. The true worshipper to God is the jnani of the fourth category. This person is the true seeker. Why is this the true seeker? Why is the jnani the true seeker? Yeah, Dhamesh?
He's seeking something out of the material world.
What is he seeking for?
God himself.
Enlightenment. He's seeking for us to get out of the world. All the others worship to stay in the world. So he's seeking to go out of the world. Which is the true purpose of worship. And the four different worshippers were explained as the atarthi. This person pursues wealth, material objects for satisfying the senses. He prays to God for wealth. As we said, Lakshmi Puja, that's to gain wealth. I'm not saying it's wrong. But with wealth, you can buy taste for the tongue, sound for the ears, smell for the nose, sights for the eyes, touch for the skin. That's all you can buy with wealth. You can't buy love. You can't buy knowledge. You can buy a library, but you can't buy knowledge. These are the five things you can buy with wealth. So wealth means material things, worldly things. So according to the Gita, this is worship, but it's not real worship, not the true sense of worship. Is that clear for everyone? Yeah. Second was the artha. This person worships when they're distressed. They're full of worries and anxieties. They pray for God's help to ease their mental agitations, to gain solace, peace of mind. Please, Bhagwan, give me shanti. Mind is agitated. Give me shanti. I lost my job. Please help me find another one. I'm agitated until then. My son's gone away on holiday. Please, my mind is agitated. Raksha karjo. He comes back in one piece. Mind is agitated until he comes back. So they pray to God for mental solace. Then the third one, Jignasu, seeker of knowledge. This person studies the Gita, Upanishads, everything, merely to gain intellectual knowledge of God. I know what God is. I read this, I read that. He wants to learn only to appease his curiosity. No interest in self-development. Just wants information, knowledge for self-satisfaction. So these three worshippers, as we said, worship God to fulfill their own worldly desires. Is everyone clear on those three? Yeah. Then the jnani, the wise, this person is a true worshipper to God. No interest in worldly pursuits, only one desire: to use his material equipment, his body, mind, intellect, to seek the truth, to gain the ultimate experience of enlightenment. His goal is, I must get out of this illusion. So that's what we covered last week in verse 16. Is that clear to everyone? Any clarifications? So, now we talk about the jnani. What makes him so special? The other three we already know. We don't need to discuss. So the fourth one is the most important worshipper. Now don't condemn the first three. Yeah, don't condemn them, because we're going to find out why they're very special as well. Yeah, those three worshippers are also quite special, but the true worshipper is the fourth one. So we're going to start with verse 17. Desam jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyo hi jnani no tyartham aham sacha mama priyah. Tesam jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyo hi jnani no tyartham aham sacha mama priyah. Of them, the jnani, the wise, ever steadfast with single pointed devotion, excels. For I am extremely dear to the jnani, the wise, and he is dear to me. Of them, the four worshippers, the jnani, he's the wise one. He's steadfast, his single pointed devotion, he moves forward. I'm extremely dear to the jnani, and he is dear to me. So, can you read the first two paragraphs? Can everyone hear her talking?
Four types of seekers worship God: the Arpati, seeker of wealth; Artha, distress; Jignasu, seeker of knowledge; and jnani, wise. Among the four seekers, the jnani excels. The jnani reflects two great qualities: nitya yukta, ever steadfast, and eka bhakti, single pointed devotion. Nitya means constant, and yukta means united. Nitya yukta therefore indicates the seeker's concerted and consistent effort to stay on the path of self-realization, to merge with the Supreme Self, a discipline adopted by the intellect. Eka Bhakti indicates his deep devotion to God. Eka means one, Bhakti means devotion, an unflinching, unswerving feeling for the Supreme, a discipline of the mind. A jnani remains dispassionate towards material objects, emotions, and thoughts pertaining to the world. The focus of his interest and attention shifts from his physical body, mind, and intellect to the inner self. His intellect maintains a steady pursuit towards self-realization. His mind surrenders completely to the Supreme Being. A jnani's mind and intellect are wholly dedicated to self-unfoldment. His pursuit continues with determination until he merges with the self, with Brahman.
So, this is what's special about the jnani. Out of the four types of worshippers, the jnani is the true seeker. So what makes a jnani a true worshipper? He's the only one who has no worldly desires, first of all. He doesn't want anything in the world. The other three worshippers are only for fulfilling worldly desires. Now, the jnani understands his purpose. He understands his role. And he pursues the self. He pursues enlightenment. He is steadfast, it's saying here, ever steadfast. Eka Bhaktir. Steadfast to stay on the path of realization. This is his only goal. No other purpose. Jnana Yoga, discipline of the intellect. He set his intellect. This is what I want to do in my life. I understand my purpose. I'm going to pursue it, and I'm steadfast. No other distractions. Eka Bhakti, he displays single-pointed devotion, focus on his goal by surrendering to the Supreme Being. Discipline of the mind, Bhakti Yoga. So his mind and his intellect is set on the goal. He uses his mind and intellect to be consistent on the path until he reaches his goal. You see, now the difference here is we may set our goal. The intellect sets the goal. Yes, I want to achieve this. What does the mind do? Later. Right now, I want to do this. I want to go here. I want to go there. So it's not easy what they're saying for jnani to focus his mind and his intellect, because our worst enemy is our mind. He's got his own likes and dislikes. See, after this class, you may say, yes, I'm convinced. I want to set my goal. From tomorrow morning, I'm on it. I'm waking up at 5 o'clock, studying half an hour, whatever, and I'm going to set my day. What happens in the morning? The mind says, another 10 minutes. Another 10 minutes. Before you know it, it's 7 o'clock. So this is the problem we have. The intellect may want to do certain things, but it's not powerful enough to overcome the mind and its emotions. And that's actually the main battle for us. We understand this philosophy. We believe that this is our goal, but we can't seem to set ourselves on that path steadfastly. Why do we have these issues? Any idea? Dipa, could you put your laptop a bit down? I can't see your face. Can we see your top of your head? Why we have these problems? Any idea? What stops us? What stops us? Yeah, Shiloh?
Is it our vasanas and attachment to the world?
Vasanas and attachment. Absolutely correct. It's our vasanas, our desires. You see what it said in this, in the beginning of this verse? He has only one desire, to reach the self. We have 1,001 desires, one of them being what reached the self. And that's the difference. He has only one desire. So it's our desires, our attachments to the world. In fact, it's our desires and attachment to the illusion. You put it that way, it's silly, isn't it? Why am I attached to the illusion? Lord Krishna is telling us it's an illusion, but still we're attached to it. It's so powerful. That's the reason. And it takes a lot of effort. So you see why the jnani is special? He has that strength, that commitment, that steadfastness. And that's why it makes him a true worshipper. But we're not far from there. We know how to do it. We know what's necessary. Most people don't even have that understanding. So, you know, but it's difficult. That's all they're saying. Any clarifications? This is what makes the jnani special. This is what this verse is saying. So, firstly,
Krishna declares the jnani to be extremely dear to him and himself dear to the jnani. This declaration seems to indicate a preferential relationship which would alienate all other seekers from him. No such preferential feeling or treatment exists in the Gita. Krishna maintains that universal love rather than preferential attachment signifies spiritual evolution. The affectionate reference to the jnani only indicates the jnani's closeness to the self. The verse conveys the importance of turning both the mind and intellect towards the self to bring the individual close to the self.
So Krishna states that the jnani is dear to me, meaning that the jnani is a true seeker. He is closer to the self than any of the other three seekers. The jnani is distinct, renowned, out of the four worshippers. Lord Krishna states, he states that he, meaning Lord Krishna, personifying the self, is talking from the perspective of the self. When Lord Krishna is talking, he's talking from the state of the self, not Mr. Krishna, but from the state of the self. Me and jnani are the one. See, we are also one. Yeah. But the difference is the jnani understands and is close to the self. We're not. Normal people are not. So he's closer to the self. He's establishing the self. He won't stray until he reaches his goal, until he merges with the self. It is his only desire. And he understands this is the goal of a human being. So Atma is saying, I love a jnani and he loves me. He is dear to me. This is what this verse means. Lord Krishna is showing affection. Jnani is close to me, he's dear to me, I love him, and he loves me back. Any clarifications? Yeah, so.
This bit where it says the importance of turning both the mind and intellect towards the self to bring the individual to the self. Is that why Bhakti is so important?
So first of all, it says, it doesn't say turning, it says tuning.
Tuning, sorry.
Yeah. It says, this, the verse conveys the importance of tuning both the mind and intellect towards the self to bring the individual close to the self. As I mentioned, by the way, that was the last sentence of the last paragraph for reference. As I mentioned, you need both the mind and the intellect tuned and have the same goal, which Anani has, yeah? So it's showing the importance of that because, as we mentioned, the intellect can make one goal and the mind is not playing along. It has its own agenda. So it's saying, so it's important for both to be on the same wavelength, basically.
So is it saying that because it's the mind that attaches us to things? Yeah, because the mind is full of likes and dislikes, emotions and attachment. So if we're thinking about where emotions come from, it comes from the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we shift and the mind is in the world, yeah, the intellect can go beyond, but the mind is in the world. So if we can shift our mind to be more devoted
mm-hmm.
to God, then hopefully the idea is that we'll be less and less attached and affected by the world if we turn our devotion, which is also via the mind, for the mind.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely right. So tuning the mind, who is against the intellect? The intellect makes the goal. I want to reach the self. I want self-realization in enlightenment. But the mind is not playing along. So one way of tuning the mind to the same goal is to start increasing devotion. See, otherwise, what happens is that mind is going into the world. As you said, desires, attachments, emotions, yeah, and it can stay there. But if you shift or tune the mind to increase devotion, then it's no longer in the world. It's on, focuses on God. So that will help you to reach that goal. So increasing devotion while you're on the path would distract the mind, take it away from the world. This is what it means, yeah? Any clarifications there? Because as we said, it's the mind that takes us away from the path. Well, how can we get the mind to play along? Increase devotion. That doesn't necessarily mean going to the temple every day for longer and praying. That it doesn't necessarily mean that. It's just devoted to God. You know, you look around you and you see God around you. You know, whenever you see something, makes you think of God. So you can increase that devotion to God. Identification. Identifying with everything in the world as Brahman. Any clarifications? That's what it means, that last line. Okay. 18. Udara sarva evaiti jnani vatmeva me matam ashtita sahi yuktatma mamevanuttamam gatim. Udara sarva evaiti jnani vatmeva me matam ashtita sahi yuktatma mamevanuttamam gatim. Noble indeed are all these, but the jnani, the wise, I deem as verily myself. For steadfast in mind, he is established in me alone as the supreme goal. Noble indeed are all these, but the jnani, the wise, I deem as verily myself. For steadfast in mind, he is established in me alone as the supreme goal. Once again, personifying the jnani as the importance of that state of the four worshippers. Arunabhan, could you read paragraph one, please?
The four types of worshippers are deemed noble since all of them seek God. The rest of humanity are not considered noble because their interest lies wholly in the material world and not in God. In the preceding verse, Krishna pronounced the Jnani, wise, to be distinct and distinguished among the four types of worshippers. In this verse, he declares the Jnani to be himself, for steadfast in mind, he is established in me alone as the supreme goal. As a Jnani focuses his mind steadfastly upon the self, he merges gradually with the self. And when the mind fully attunes to the self, he becomes the self, the supreme goal of human existence. An individual finds absolute fulfillment in life only upon merging with the self, like a river merging with the ocean. Self-realization, therefore, marks the ultimate goal of human existence, the consummation of human experience, the abode of absolute peace and happiness.
So as we said in the beginning of the class, there are two types of people, those that believe in God and those that do not. Which category are you all in? Well, you're all here, so you must believe in God. So you fall in that category. Probably 90% of people in this world don't believe in God. And of the 10% that do, there are four types of worship, as we said. And that's why they're considered noble. Because at least God is in their minds. For whatever reason, at least they're thinking of something beyond the world. So they're considered noble. These worshippers are regarded as noble, since at least they seek God or they think of God, even if it's for selfish reasons. Compared to the ones who has no understanding or interest in God, they're noble. I don't believe in God. Interest is only in the material world. Out of the 10% that do believe in God, a small, very small percentage that understand the true purpose of worship, and that's the Jnani. You see why it makes him quite distinct. He has established me alone as the supreme goal. His focus, his mind steadfastly upon the self, emerges gradually with the self. He becomes the self, the supreme goal of human existence. Human beings only find absolute fulfillment when they merge with the self. Absolute peace and happiness. This is the goal of human beings, it seems. And Jnani understands that. Is there any questions on that? This is what makes him distinct. Bernabe, next paragraph, paragraph two.
Beings derive happiness in four distinct stages. Selokyam, inhabiting the same world. Sampiyam, gaining vicinity. Sarupiyam, seeing the form. Sayuyam, merging with the other. As you move up from one stage to the next, you derive greater happiness. In the final stage, you gain absolute peace and bliss.
So when you strive towards self-realization, you gain peace and happiness, as we said, absolute peace and happiness. It's saying that this peace and happiness comes in four stages and explains those four stages. And there's a parallel here to a boy arriving back from UK after studying for 3 years, comes back to India. The parents have missed him for 3 years. The happiness that they gain. And this is similar to the happiness you gain on the path to self-realization. This is what it's saying. So, Urban, could you read the next four paragraphs, please? Just leave the last one.
Sailokyam, in the first stage, you feel happy merely because the object of your desire and you occupy the same land. For example, a father experiences this happiness when his son returns home after a long period of study abroad. The father resides in Pune and his son arrives at the Mumbai International Airport. Nevertheless, he gets a thrill of joy at the thought of his son having arrived in the same land. Samipyam, the boy then boards a local flight from Bombay to Pune. As the plane approaches Pune, the father's joy increases at the thought of his son coming closer to him. This joy marks a second stage, arising out of closeness to the object of desire. Sarupyam, the next stage of actually seeing the son alighting from the aircraft at Pune Airport sends a far greater thrill in the father, the joy of actual vision of the object. Sayuyam, the final stage climaxes the much-awaited meeting with him when they embrace, the actual merger, as it were, one uniting with the other, the consummation of happiness.
So you see, those are the four stages. Salokya, the boy lands in Mumbai. See, this is the old text, is still Bombay in there. Now it's Mumbai. So he arrives in the same country. Father looks on the internet. Oh, plane is landed. His excitement. Then Salokya, he comes to the same country, arrives in Mumbai. Then he gets onto the flight to Pune. Oh, the plane's taken off from Mumbai to Pune. Excitement increases. Sarupya, the plane lands. He sees his son coming off the plane. Oh, look, I think that's him. He gets more excitement. Then the mother says, no, that's not him. Oh, okay. Then a few minutes later, you see the son coming off the plane. More excitement. Then Sayudhya, they meet, they embrace. Complete happiness. Bliss. I haven't seen you for 3 years. And they meet. So the level of happiness increases at different stages. So similarly, what it's saying is while you're on the path of self-realization, there are four different stages of happiness. We won't go into detail of those four stages because they are to be experienced. And I can't tell you from experience. So you'll have to imagine it. So those are the four stages of happiness as you develop on the path of self-realization. Last paragraph.
Agnani, steadfast in his spiritual practices, culminating in meditation, gains this complete merger with the Supreme Being, the ultimate spiritual enlightenment.
That is the joy in four stages that the jnani feels as he approaches self-realization. You see, you got to understand, when you, for example, study in the morning, and you read these verses, there's a sense of happiness. If you're doing it like in a pure way, there is a sense of happiness, sense of joy that you gain from just studying it. Just thinking about it. I wonder what it's like to reach that stage. They can imagine when you're actually getting closer, when you're focused and you're going on the path, how much happiness you can. Just by reading and studying it in the morning, you get happiness. I spent 3 years in the ashram, And this is all we did. Breathe, think, everything is just about knowledge of this self. And I'll hand on my heart, I'll tell you now, those were the best three years of my life. If you saw the room I was living in, you think, how do you live in this room? Sharing bathroom with 10 people. But I can tell you that was the best 3 years of my life because I felt the most peace and happiness. You can't explain it. So just studying this subject gives you that feeling. So can you imagine walking the path? Any questions? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavanmam prabhatyate vasudeva sarvamitti samahatma sudurlabah bahunam janmanamante jnanavanmam prabhatyate Vasudeva sarvamitti samahatma sudurlabah. At the end of many births, the man of wisdom reaches me, realizing that all is Vasudeva, reality. Such a great soul is very difficult to find. At the end of many births, the man of wisdom reaches me, realizing that all is Vasudeva, reality. Such a great soul is very difficult to find. See, me with a capital M once again means the reality, the self. Lord Krishna is talking from that stage as a self-realized soul, not from Mr. Krishna. So it's, the self is talking through him. Ravi, paragraph one, please.
The verse states that the wise one takes manifold births before gaining spiritual enlightenment. This concept of passing through manifold births appears throughout the Shastras, spiritual texts. It has taken deep root in the minds of spiritual seekers, turning them very cynical. Consequently, every seeker today, irrespective of his spiritual development, firmly believes that self-realization lies far, far out of his reach. Spiritual enlightenment has turned into myth rather than reality. This distorts the message of the Shastras. The Shastras only caution seekers of the enormous efforts required to gain the ultimate experience. The fact that a seeker makes a genuine attempt at self-realization itself indicates his spiritual advancement. Many of his past lives could have built his present spiritual status. His present life could perhaps be taken as the end instead of the beginning of the many births referred to in this verse. Therefore, one need not read cynicism here.
Very interesting verse this is. So, first of all, it says it needs a lot of effort. So let's put this in perspective. What is this effort? What are we made of? Human beings, made of what? Back to basics. What is a human being made of? This is class number one of FHI.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Body, mind, and spirit. Body, mind, and self or spirit. So this is what we're made of. Now, to develop the body takes how long? Yeah? Anybody know? Shilapin, you should know.
It's 9 months.
9 months. See, that's a professional talking. 9 months. Gym every day or every other day. Look after diet, what to eat, what not to eat. Consistent effort to stay on that path. It's not easy. I would say 2 to 3 years with dedication. That's how long it takes to develop the body. Yeah, everything, everybody agree? To develop the mind and its emotions, to have fine emotions, getting to know your partner, nature of your children, takes even longer. 5, 10, 15 years it could take to develop the mind's emotions. Then to develop the intellect, what do? You go to nursery, you go to school, you go to college, university, just to develop the buddhi. 16 years, develop the intellect. That's why it says spiritual development. How long does it take? How long does it take, spiritual development?
Many, many births.
Many births, many lifetimes. I'm just putting it into perspective so you have an idea. Otherwise, I just say many lifetimes doesn't mean anything. Many lifetimes. This means that for one to reach the stage of a jnani, to seek the knowledge of the self, to be able to tune your mind and intellect, put in the correct effort, it can take many births and deaths to reach this stage and to gain enlightenment. So people will say, oh, forget it. Why am I bothering? I don't have that patience. We'll see in the next life. So people who read this verse, they get cynical. It's too far away. I have probably many, many lives to go to reach that stage, isn't it? That's what people would say, naturally. But what this verse also is saying is that, yes, it takes many births and deaths and many lifetimes, but you don't know how many births you already have had. How do you know? You don't know. It takes a lot of effort to reach that goal. But how many births and deaths have you already had to reach this stage? We don't know. Nobody knows. So you can't take that stance. It's too difficult. I don't know how many lives. Maybe next life. Benita. Don't need to laugh about it. This could be your last lifetime. You don't know. There was a cynical laugh, you see? So let's put this into perspective from what we know so far. Two kinds of people in this world. One that believes in God and one that doesn't believe in God. We covered this last verse. We said 90% people don't believe in God. 10% may believe in God. From that 10% from believers, four types of people, four types of worshippers. Only one is a true believer, the jnani. So you're already in the 10%. That's why you're in this class. You're already gaining knowledge. So which category are you in? You're very close to being a jnani. You're gaining knowledge. It's like you're already there. If you think about it, it's like you're already there. You're so near. Only thing missing is effort. Lord Krishna is encouraging us, not discouraging us. Yeah. The facts are that we're in the 10%, we believe in God. The facts are that we're close to being a jnani because we're gaining knowledge and we're thinking about self-realization. What's left? Believing, putting effort in, tuning your mind and intellect on the path. You already know the path. You already know how to get there. The Gita is teaching us that. You're already gaining knowledge, understanding. So, you know, it could be the last birth. Who were to say? Dipa, confidence. This is my last birth. Any clarifications?
Ignorance of the self projects the illusion of this world. When the wise acquire the knowledge of self, the illusion vanishes. The entire pluralistic phenomenon of this world falls back to reveal the one supreme reality, Vasudeva. The realized soul recognizes the entire world of things and beings as nothing but Brahman. Self-realization marks the end of human delusion. Thereafter, the self-realized experiences Brahman. Brahman alone, everywhere.
Thank you. The first two lines says, ignorance of self projects the illusion of this world. When the wise acquire the knowledge of self, the illusion vanishes. Yeah? Does everyone understand that? It's like saying, it's the same as saying, ignorance of the rope produces the illusion of the snake. Ignorance of the rope produces the illusion of the snake. When you acquire the knowledge of the rope, the snake disappears. Correct? Once your partner says, hey, it's not a snake, it's a rope, you have knowledge of the rope. The snake is no longer there. Everyone with me? You're already acquiring the knowledge of the self. You already have some idea that this world is an illusion. Just need that belief. You're already gaining knowledge of the self. When a person reaches this stage, he's a man of wisdom. After gaining the knowledge of the self, ultimately he merges with the self and experiences self-realization. They then experience everything in this world as Brahman. They understand everything is Brahman, is the self. Once you reach that goal, the illusion disappears. No more snake, only rope. No more world, only self. Any clarifications? Yeah, Dharmesh.
So, as you said, we're gaining knowledge, but I think the most important thing is to turn it into wisdom. A person can have knowledge. If you don't actually turn that into wisdom, the knowledge is useless.
Absolutely. So the next question should be, how do you put it into turn into wisdom? You put effort in. This is the effort we're talking about. You're gaining the knowledge. Every Sunday morning, you're gaining knowledge. When you're self-studying, you're gaining knowledge. When you're Googling on YouTube, yeah, you're gaining knowledge. But knowledge is like gold on a mule's back. Only when you convert it to wisdom, it has any meaning. See, the person in the third category, he gains knowledge. Knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. He can read this Gita inside out, left and right. But that is only knowledge. He's still the same person he was before he read the Gita or the Upanishads. So the effort is to convert that knowledge into wisdom. Only when you do that, you can walk the path. It changes you. Hence, this morning study is very important because that's the most important catalyst that converts the knowledge into wisdom. And also to do it at Sapphic time, 4:30 to 6:30. You're giving yourself the maximum, you're putting in the maximum effort that you can to convert that knowledge into wisdom. So now you even know how to do it. So the effort has to be put in, isn't it, Dharmesh? Ruby, last paragraph, please.
The world comprises an infinite number of living beings, ranging from humans to birds in the sky, fishes in the ocean, to all types of creatures, including microscopic organisms. Considering them all, the proportion of humans to the rest of the being becomes
infinitesimal.
And among human beings, the vast majority remain extroverts, seeking material wealth and sensual pleasures. A small percentage turns towards God, becomes spiritual. Of the four types of spiritual seekers enumerated in the earlier verse, three of them seek mundane fruits through their prayers. Only the fourth really seeks the Supreme Self. Among these rare few evolved seekers, an exceptionally great soul emerges to gain the ultimate experience of Brahman. A sadhak, seeker, therefore needs to exert tremendous effort to reach Brahman.
There you go, Dharmesh. Tremendous effort. So, putting into perspective again, forget about just human beings. What is this world consisting of? Person who gets to this stage of just being a human being from all the living beings in the world is extremely rare. Forget about you winning the lottery, one in 14 million or something. This is like one in a billion. The fact that you're born as a human being is in billions, considering how many organisms and animals there are in this world. Fishes in the ocean, birds in the sky, microscopic organisms. So it's very rare to have this birth as a human being. And out of being that human being, you've won the lottery, you became a human being. Vast majority remain extroverted, seeking material wealth and sensual pleasures, non-believers of God. Of the believers, God, three of them seek mundane fruits through their prayers. Only the fourth seek the Supreme Self. Rare is the one who seeks God to merge with the self and is able to put in the right effort. And among this rare few evolved seekers, an exceptionally great soul emerges to gain the ultimate experience of Brahman, a sadhak, seeker. Therefore, you need to exert tremendous effort to reach Brahman. So according to this, you're really there, aren't you? Think about it. How closer can you get? That last effort is needed now. I'm not trying to humor you. I'm being serious. I know it may seem funny, but you put it into perspective, these two verses, these last three verses we've read, you read that again and you think about it. What are the chances that you're at this stage? What are the percentage out of just human beings? Not only interested in God, but wanting to know the goal of a human being, and then wanting to learn about the self, the spirit, Brahman, Father in heaven, God. Have an interest in it. Very few people are in that category. And then to walk away from it and not put in the effort. What's the word? Mahamurk. Not murk, but mahamurk. Big fool. Colossal fool. So it puts it into perspective. Any clarifications? And you know what? The next chapters, up to chapter 18, explains how to get there in greater detail. So this is the end of this topic, and we begin topic 5. The deluded seek and gain finite fruit. Deluded seek and gain finite fruit. We talk about the people who, talking about people who, deprived of wisdom, approach other gods. So, any other questions? Everyone have some understanding of what we've covered today? Good. So, put in the effort. That's all you need to do. Anurabin, Lord is telling you what to do. You just have to now do it. Just do it, as Nike says. Just do it. Great. Chalo. Have a lovely week. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank Bye. You. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Nathan.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Good. All right, Peter.